So I will be talking about so-called kinematic dynamo problem. I will understand by kinematic dynamo, I largely understand the growth of magnetic field, which is independent of viscosity. So we will consider growth of magnetic field, which is purely due to fluctuations of velocity field, and no reconnection is assumed in this problem. So the basic equation is the equation for change of magnetic field under the action of velocity field. Equals zero, since I drop the resistivity here. And this equation has a physical sense and has geometrical meaning. So physically, this means that magnetic field is frozen into the fluid. So if we have two fluid particles, and initially vector of magnetic field, so its beginning and its end is attached to these two particles, and two particles evolve, and magnetic field vector evolves with them. So this is exactly the meaning of Rosenkind law. So geometrically, this just means that this is the lead derivative of magnetic field along the vector field, along the velocity field V. So we assume that velocity field is short time correlated. More precisely, the following form will be used. Time t here, delta of t. And this assumption is, of course an assumption, but in some in real physical settings, correlation time of the velocity field is of the order of eddy turnover time. But one can argue that in some astrophysical application, this time can be equal or less than eddy turnover time. So this approximation can be valid as a zero-order approximation. So also, I will assume that if we draw the picture of velocity field and magnetic field in K space. So we assume that velocity field is concentrated on very small K, K velocity field, and resistive scale for the magnetic field is very large, somewhere here. So initially, magnetic field is produced on very large scales. Very large in K. This is small scales, very much in K, but small scales. So initially, magnetic field is produced at very large scales by some instabilities. In astrophysical applications, it can be Biermann battery instability. And then it is transferred over scales towards small K. And finally, when it reaches the resistive scale, something new happens. And this is a completely different problem. I will not discuss in full this problem today. But the main point is velocity with which magnetic field propagates in K space is exponentially fast. So this K, some characteristic K, grows exponentially fast with time, some coefficient here. Therefore, all this picture is varied only at times which are less than than logarithm of scale separation. Actually, this argument is true even if we start with even if we put initial seed magnetic field somewhere in between of these two scales. Magnetic field will be spread to the left and to the right exponentially fast. And actually, after the time which is equal to logarithm of scale ratio, this picture will not be valid anymore. So analytically, to proceed on analytical level, let's introduce the longitudinal velocity correlator function. So kappa L, or just kappa, will be equal to xi xj divided by x squared kappa ij of x. And longitudinal magnetic field correlator will be xi xj x squared hij. where hij is determined in the same way. Okay, but at the same time. So then one can show that one can write a closed equation for the function h, which looks like that. So I introduce also the function k, which is kappa naught minus kappa x. And also, if we include resistivity here, which really can be done in a very general case, this equation, one could add to the resistivity here. So equation for the longitudinal correlator of magnetic field looks like that. In case space by Cassett and Anderson. Yeah. Actually.
By whom in case space?
Cassett and Anderson. Russell yes. Cassett and Anderson. Already from this equation, expanding k function in the inertial range when x much greater than mu and much smaller than some integral scale, this function is proportional to x squared, one can immediately obtain all these results and show that spectrum indeed propagates exponentially fast to the right and to the left. And after that time, this picture is not valid. So when this spectrum propagates to the right, it can also be obtained from this equation. Suppose we have some pumping at some k naught here. When it propagates to the right, the spectrum which is formed here is k to 3/2. And all this spectrum grows as a whole with exponent e to 15 divided by 4 t. So this is how this picture is growing.
What is your time unit again, please?
Time unit. So I assume that kappa function, this k function, is equal to x squared. So time units here is editure over time. And I assume that editure over time is equal to 1. So everything here is measured in editure over time.
So the editure over the smallest scale in the inertial range.
Editure over is a smaller scale here in velocity field. Anyway, just coefficient of expansion of this k function. So I assume that this coefficient is 1. So when actually, this equation also allows to investigate the problem when this viscous scale is reached by the magnetic field. In this case, one should assume that field grows, that there is a solution which looks like that, quasi-stationary solution, substituted here, and one can show that for psi function, one can get a Schrodinger type equation, and its eigenvalues coincide with the gamma. So this is how the problem was solved by Kazantsev. And one can also show that this gamma is equal to 15 divided by 4 minus some small correction, which is depends on Reynolds number, which scales like n squared, 1 squared, 1, divided by log square of the ratio of scales. Okay. So we see that, in fact, the problem of kinematic dynamo can be solved in some limiting cases. So first of all, when spectrum is not reaching the boundaries, and secondly, when it has reached the boundaries, but still fluctuations of magnetic field are small, so there is no back reaction on the magnetic field, or on the velocity field. Now there is a case when magnetic field is generated on very small scales and propagates towards large scales. And in this case, the problem of kinematic dynamo also can be solved exactly, and this will be shown tomorrow by Grisham. It's just a magnetic field on very small scales, how it grows. It's exactly this picture.
Okay. Tomorrow there will be problem solved with diffusion, but not for something generated at diffusion scale, at resistive scale.
Yeah, but okay.
Not tell the story.
Yeah, no question. So I would like to consider the problem when magnetic field is generated on very large scales and propagates towards small scales. During all this propagation, the magnetic field can be considered as frozen into the fluid. So actually, I will consider some more general problem. I assume that I would like to obtain statistics of some objects, not only magnetic field, but arbitrary tensor objects, which have some upper indices and lower indices, at one point x. So I consider only one point a object. And I ask what the statistics of this one point object is going to be. I don't make any assumptions about the velocity field. I assume the velocity field can be incompressible, can be compressible, but it should be Gaussian and white time correlated. So, for example, in magnetic field application, even if we have compressible fluid, we know that the vector B divided by rho is frozen into the fluid. So this is a real vector. Also, we know that if we have scalars, gradients of scalars are advected as a covariance vectors. So this is a very general sentence. Any products of these vectors give you tensors. So it happens that all this can be described in just some general way if we know the statistics of the metric tensor which is advected by the fluid. So metric tensor obeys the following equation. And this happens because if you have some tensor at the initial moment equal to zero, so at some subsequent moment, it will be written in the following way. At M, dx, y, dx, y, M. This is function of t. So, and if we now average with respect to initial statistics of this tensor, which we assume we have nothing better, we assume this statistics is Gaussian, then we have to this average will be expressed through delta through Kronecker deltas, and we are left with the metric tensor or product of metric tensors. So, the object we have to know is how to average traces to the power n of metric tensors to the power m. That's what we need to know.
Can you define the metric tensor, please, for this application?
Metric tensor, suppose one can define through the Lagrangian picture. Suppose that we have some initial position of fluid particles y, and this each fluid particles which go n y goes to x, c y, and I defined contravariant tensor as dx I, dl, dx k, dy l, summation of l. So I can say such tensors. So, in fact, to find average of such object, we should only know the distribution of eigenvalues of this tensor. Because of rotational invariance, we should always diagonalize this tensor, and we have to know only distribution of its eigenvalues. So the equation for probability density of eigenvalues, probability density of eigenvalues of the metric tensor can also be derived in a closed form if we assume that velocity field is wide and time and Gaussian. So this equation is rather lengthy, so I will just show the final equation and explain a different. I explain what all these parameters mean. So A is a parameter in so we assume that kappa function ij can be expanded as kappa naught delta ij plus delta ij x squared plus 2a x a x j when x is much smaller than L. Since I will be interested in one point objects, I actually need to take a very, very small initial distance and then fuse two points together. So this A is this exactly this A. So for the compressible, for the irrotational case, A is equal to 1. For the incompressible case, A is equal to 1 divided by D plus 1. So D is space dimensionality, so we assume that we consider a direction of vector in any number of dimensions. So now this equation can be transformed by this change of variables. To the following form. So this lower part of this equation is nothing but modified Calogero Sutherland type of Hamiltonian. For if we assume actually, the interpretation is the following. If we assume that delta I are coordinates of d particles on the line, delta I, and those particles interact through this kind of potential, this will be the Schrödinger equation for those particles. So assume that E is a wave function, this is the Schrödinger equation for this particle. This part which is written here depends only on the determinant of this metric and is due to compressibility. If the fluid is incompressible, this part is identically zero. So any function of J is a solution. So now to average any expression constructed out of G, we have to actually average some expression which is polynomial in eigenvalues. Some polynomial in lambda i's, right? So I can divide and multiply by g. G is nothing but product of all lambdas. To the power 1 divided by d. And then if initially my distribution can be written as a product of p of g s of zeta, then it will remain factorized like that in all time, and I can just average g and lambdas independently. And actually, the part which is dependent of g is non-universal because it also depends on compressibility parameter and space dimensionality. So the part which is independent of G is universal. It doesn't depend on how compressible the field is. It doesn't depend on which vector covariance or contravariance we are considering. So it's just it describes some geometrical properties of this advection. So now we have to know how to average some polynomials of lambda. So but we know that Calogero-Sutherland Hamiltonian has eigen polynomials, which are symmetric polynomials of lambdas. And these polynomials are called Jack polynomials. For example, if we consider polynomials of the order 2, so one polynomial is equal to lambda 1 squared plus, say, and we consider space dimensionality d equal to 2, and 2 squared, and second polynomial will be lambda 1 squared plus lambda 2 squared plus 2 thirds lambda 1, lambda 2. So in this polynomial are eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian, of this Hamiltonian. So to average, now we can easily average any product of this eigenvectors. We just multiply it with this equation, integrate by parts, because this operator is self-adjoint, and find all the growth rates.
Do you know why that equation is second order?
Because it's a Fokker-Planck type. Because it's Gaussian. Mm-hmm. And now we can average exactly all the polynomials. So as an example, so I will just consider some particular example.
Can you write green function of collision?
No, I cannot write green function because those polynomials are not a full complete system. So in some particular case, I choose the following.
And no green function for this operator.
No.
It looks integrable. No?
It's like.
Completely integrable.
No. Just a polynomial. Yeah. So now consider two different vectors, A and B. And we ask how the product A, B squared grows with time. Just some particular examples. So to do that, using this procedure, like writing how each vector evolves, so A of time, I is equal to dxi, dyj, ij at the moment zero, writing the same for vector b, and averaging with respect to initial distribution, we can write that this is nothing but trace of g squared. So we need to average trace of g squared in this example. So trace of g squared is lambda 1 squared plus lambda 2 squared. So now we have to expand this polynomial, if we consider two-dimensional space. Now we have to expand this polynomial into Jack polynomials, into those polynomials. It's easy. So and finally write the answer. So B2 is equal to E, 8, actually, in two-dimensional case, it will be 3 gamma T. Just write. Exponent E 2 T 2 plus 2 A plus 2 thirds exponent E 1 T 2 plus 2 A. So A is a compressibility parameter, gamma is 1 divided by D 1 plus A d plus 1, actually when d is equal to 2, is 2 and 3. So this is the exact answer, and E1 and E2 are eigenvalues of the closure Hamiltonian. They are equal to E2 is equal to 3, and E1 happens to be equal to 0 because of this two-dimensional case, but actually it can be done in so this is the exact answer. So one can ask whether this is really important, because we always have the largest growth rate, and largest growth rate probably can be obtained by some simple means. For example, if we consider ellipsoid in this fluid, and this ellipsoid gets elongated through along only one axis and contracted along some other axis. So if we know this elongation, this probably will be the main growth rate. But actually, it's not true, because we can consider such a combination of these vectors. For example, AB minus A squared B squared sandwich. Where leading of the term will be canceled out. So
squares,
yeah. So we will be left with some subleading terms which you cannot extract only from this picture. Well, for example, if you consider some like high rank tensor, some stress tensors which are addressed as tensors. So this method will give you immediate answer. So now the last simple question which I would like to show. So to get the evolution of any tensor object, we use statistics of metric tensor G with some very particular initial condition. We assume that G ij of t equal to 0 is equal to delta function ij. So one can ask how, just very general question, how the volume element of the fluid is deformed due to this advection. So we assume that we have some distribution of volume elements initially, so some distribution of the tensor G, and ask what happens with the volume element. And it's easy to show that due to this factorization, due to the factorization of term which is responsible for the determinant of this tensor, and its eigenvalues normalized by this determinant, one can show that this volume will be constructed as a whole and will be deformed in such a way that the following limiting distribution, so p when t goes to infinity, so the limiting distribution will be invariant with respect of inversion of all lambdas. So if we take lambda 1 to g 1 to lambda, actually for any lambda, so it will be invariant. And actually this happens because the initial equation is invariant with respect to this change equation which I just wrote here. So one can show that this equation is invariant with respect to inversion of all lambdas.
Only for the
relative velocity, yeah? Yeah. And in the incompressible case, it's easy to understand because in incompressible case, it's time reversibility, and so all Lyapunov exponent. So the limiting distribution should be invariant with respect to change of sign of Lyapunov exponent. So in the compressible case, it goes into this form. One should also assume that volume contraction and expansion of fluidity holds. And now the immediate consequence of this symmetry is the following. If I consider some fluid element initially, and suppose that with some probability that fluid element has evolved into some tube. So the configuration like this. So this fluid element carries some magnetic field inside. For example, some magnetic field gets contracted in some tube. So with the same probability, the symmetry tells us that with the same probability, the configurations which look like sheets. So should enter into the theory with the same probability. So when magnetic field is concentrated in this sheet. Just because when we do this reversibility, we should get sheets from the tube.
The early form of the statement was that Kreisman proved that for the related velocity field, you have area and linear element drawn by the same group.
This is really not the case when it's not related to relativity. You have area and linear element, yeah. And area go by the same rate if velocity is some reversible. And if it is not, the relativity. This is a particular case of field generalization. So, and the last, just I would like briefly mention some other question in this theory. So everywhere here, we assume that kappa minus kappa x is expanded as x squared. So one can also ask question: what happens if this exponent is less than 2? So if we have, for example, 2 minus gamma. So will the dynamo survive? What will be the growth rate? You know, how all this picture will look like? And the answer is the following. One can, of course, write the same equation as I wrote for the H function as before. This equation is general, it does not depend on any particular form of this K function. But the answer that was obtained by Kazantsev is the following, that when gamma greater than 1, there is no dynamo, no kinematic dynamo in this in this theory. And this happens because the effective potential for the Schrödinger equation, which for gamma less than 1 looks like this, This is effective potential. This is potential of Schrödinger equation, which is which I have not written yet. So, psi is equal to 0, where u x some effective potential that can be constructed from the coefficients of the H equation which I wrote before. No, it's equal to 0 because this potential involves, among other terms, the term like gamma divided by k. So when I increase gamma, this potential well goes up, and the maximal growth rate, because I need energy 0, so maximal growth rate will correspond to the ground state in this potential. So when gamma gets smaller than 1, this potential is repulsive. So it doesn't have any.
No, it's still negative, but it doesn't bound even.
Okay,
there is some
more exact boundary 915, something like that, which it gets negative, right. But it's exactly. So but when it greater than 1, there is no boundary, there is no bound state in this potential, and therefore there is no dynamo. But actual question of matching finding ground state in this potential is like a question which involves some asymptotic analysis, because there are several boundary layers on this scale, and this analysis gives a growth rate. So
what's new can you tell about zero gamma?
Actually, nothing. I just wanted to mention that dynamo, actually kinematic dynamo, does not exist for some potential. Yeah. But actually, this case, if you consider some astrophysical applications, this case seems to be not relevant for astrophysical applications due to this picture. Resistive and k velocity. Since magnetic fields exist here on very large case, so on very small scales, and this scale corresponds to scales much smaller than the viscous scales of the velocity field. The velocity field is smooth.
So
that's
physical
people. Yeah.
There are other cases where you could have magnetic fields growing up in the inertial range of the velocity. If you imagined a low magnetic Prandtl number dynamo, so potentially, if one wanted to assume that a star, for example, started off with an incredibly weak magnetic field, with a poor assumption, you could potentially find some
Okay, so when we have the opposite limit. Okay, and actually that's it what I wanted to tell about this theory. So if there are any questions, I yeah.
Can you figure out the probability distribution assumption of field strength, for example, from this theory?
So B, yeah, true, because field strength is B squared. Right, and if I know the probability distribution for B, I can find probability for B squared for vector B.
Do you find that it's log normal?
Yeah, it should be log normal for large time, for when t is say greater than 1, but much smaller than this logarithm of scale differences. Everything actually has log normal asymptotics in this theory. And this is, yeah, this is for the smooth case when this in this expansion gamma is equal, actually it's different gamma, it's not growth rate, when this gamma is equal to 0. Yeah.
What happens in the irrotational case?
In what case?
In the irrotational case.
So in irrotational case, dynamo in kinematic dynamo also exists. Yeah, also exists, but this exponent which I showed, lambda is equal to 15 force, gets modified. It's a little bit smaller. It's like 15, 24, something like that, if I remember that correctly. It is a bit smaller.
In the irrotational case?
Yes, yes. So when we don't have diffusivity, also, even if it has a diffusivity. Even if it has a diffusivity, right, it just it goes. If it's
always less on the
Yeah, it's less. So in two-dimensional case, of course, we don't have dynamo in any situation. But in three-dimensional case, always.
Is that is it critical Reynolds number known for that case? I mean, in the other case, it's known to be something on the order of 70, right?
Yeah,
I
don't think exactly, but I know that there were some papers like 10 or 15 years ago when people investigated this, like Norikov, Rusmakin, Skolov, some papers who investigated when dynamo, so when this patent, so how dynamo behaves if we try to get this to scales close to each other. So at some critical number there is no dynamo.
What was the structure of this Hamiltonian?
Collision Hamiltonian
plus something and third. You use eigen functions of collision, right?
Yes.
And what the function that
This part describes evolution of G, and this part describes evolution of Clojure type. So this multiplier, which comes here, comes from this part, from the compressibility.
But they're not completely decoupled, are
they?
G and all the eigenvalues.
No, there's no G here because this is ratio of eigenvalue.
Yes.
So I introduce d plus one variables, not d but d plus one, but they're not independent. The sum of these variables is zero. Sum of all this is zero. But to preserve this symmetric form, I just write through this d plus one dependent variable. Mm-hmm. And actually, one can show that, for example, there is dynamo for such object as gradient of passive scalar. So gradient of Poisson scalar in 3 and 2-dimensional case, there is always dynamo for this object, even if it has compressibility.
But what is the measure of compressibility? Where does the sound speed appear?
Measure of compressibility is this parameter A, which I wrote.
And what is it physically?
It's a very uncomfortable question.
It's a very uncomfortable. So we can try to measure, say, average of dV, say squared and gradient of root V squared. And this parameter will enter somehow when it's equal to 1, when it's equal to, like, you know, 1, this term is 0. When it's equal to minus 1 divided by d plus 1, this term is 0. So
that's
I don't know how this... Huh? What?
Global average of the whole system.
Yeah. It for some hour. But this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a question on a different topic. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of how irrotational motions stretch one of these volume elements.
Irrotational.
Did you say that for irrotational motions you still have exponential growth?
Yeah, yes.
So how would irrotational motions stretch these volume elements?
Oh, physically it's impossible, you know, because after all, I mean, if you change volumes and eventually density should be axial pressure and stop the process. It's no problem in incompressible flow to have exponential stretching ad infinitum, but of course it's impossible in the compressible flow to have compression. So it's, in this model, in a way, it's a little bit artificial. So it's, physically, you can describe as a model this, because here you have Lyapunov exponents, and you have some of Lyapunov exponents which is non-zero in this particular model, then compressibility is non-zero. It is physically impossible. You cannot stretch or compress any fluid element. It means that it would be, you know, reasonably working for a finite time when you have almost uniform density, and then you impose some compressible velocity, and until back reaction from pressure starts to fill, then you consider this kind of model.
But actually, in this consideration, pressure comes into play when this G reaches diffusive scales also. So when it's everything reaches diffusive scales.
If you take your model to velocity field, I may show that in this model pressure does not have a steady state probability distribution. It probably Sinai knew already 20 years.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about steady state distribution.
You're taking velocity field, the delta gradient velocity field, this compressible part. In such a velocity field, you cannot have a steady density distribution, which means that such a velocity field cannot be a steady state of acoustic turbulence. Cannot.
Yeah, but velocity field is given just, I'm just...
You know. And I'm telling you that velocity field that you give cannot correspond to any compressible fluid state turbulence of compressible fluid.
Okay.
Because in such a velocity field, if you put now pressure field, even uniform initially, after some time you will have exponentially growing fluctuations in the ground. So it's a very dangerous model. I mean, a lot of people with the time, myself included, who worked with this model, but I mean, we have to understand that it's kind of, you know, you need a stretch to put physics into it.
Well, he might have been asking a slightly different question. If you, if you have a little element in irrotational flow, but there's vorticity around, you can have all kinds of stretching going on. I think you don't have to have vorticity right at this location where you're measuring the stretching and so forth.
Yeah,
that's easy to get, is what I'm saying.
Vorticity somewhere. Yeah, I guess if you had no vorticity though.
Then it's a problem.
I mean, you have either the divergence point or convergence point. I mean, you have a divergence point of quasi stretching.
Yeah.
You are stretching in all two directions. Otherwise, you would only stretch in two directions. Now you are stretching in all three directions. So, in that sense, of course, even better.
Formally, you can perform in just three eigenvalues, sum of zero, when one of them is positive, one of them is negative, and go ahead, stretch here, you can
participate. Yeah.
Okay. No further questions?